You're listening to a Countout Podcast.
This podcast is sponsored by Ramp. Are you the decision maker in your company? Consider this. For the first time in decades, there's a better option for a corporate card and spend management platform. Meet Ramp, the only corporate card and spend management system designed to help you spend less money so you can make more. With Ramp, you get full visibility into your company's spending and control who spends what with each vendor. Ramp software collects and verifies receipts instantly to save your team valuable time. Ramp automates data entry and routine tasks with automated approvals, expense categorization and bill payments, time-consuming tasks, which means you'll stop wasteful spending and close your books in hours instead of days. Businesses that use Ramp add up to 5% to their bottom line the first year. If you're a decision maker, adding Ramp could be one of the best decisions you've ever made. Get $250 when you join Ramp for free. Just go to ramp.com/easy. ramp.com/easy. ramp.com/easy.
Cards issued by Sutton Bank and Celtic Bank, members of FDIC. Terms and conditions apply.
At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
Again, who are we, Curtis?
We are the sweetest boys here on the Ichiban Sweet Cast. I'm your good friend Curtis Spears. That's your bad friend Rafe Houston. We are the Ichiban Sweet Cast. We're the New Japan Pro Wrestling talking boys, but today we're not talking about New Japan Pro Wrestling. We're talking about New Japan adjacent, though. We're talking about my boy Crazy Uncle Liger.
Absolutely. Now, you've been banging on about this match for as long as I've known you, and I'd never seen it before. But that's it. We're talking about Brian Pillman, Flying Brian versus Jushin Thunder Liger for the WCW Lightweight, is it what? Light Heavyweight Championship? Light Heavyweight Championship at Super Brawl back in 92. All the way back in 92. Now, as somebody that's never seen this match before, this is one of your favorites. So I'm going to let you go sick on it in a second. But I will say that I was impressed because when you look at like the work rate shit that's flying around, had I seen this shit in 92, I could see why everyone was like obsessed with these guys, because I doubt many people were putting out what's essentially the standard in matches today.
Yeah, it's definitely something very different, especially for a Southern-style promotion like WCW was at the time. This match, imagine be me, 8 years old, sitting down on a Saturday, eating a bowl of cereal, watching this match and just going, holy shit, buddy. Yeah. What did I just see? This guy comes out of nowhere looking like a fucking Power Ranger.
And he's doing Power Ranger shit as well. Like, he does that thing that you see like Will Ospreay and Ricochet and stuff do that broke the internet for a hot minute, where they do like a handstand, hit the ropes, and then, you know, spring back and then fucking land. I remember when the Ricochet Ospreay thing happened and the internet fucking lost it crying about it. Fucking Liger does it here. He doesn't land in like a superhero pose. He lands on his feet. But he was doing that shit in 92. And everybody's carrying on in the fucking late 2000s that like these guys are breaking wrestling. Like,
yeah, no, dude. Like, Liger was so ahead of his time. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, like, he wrote the book that so many of these dudes follow. It was like Liger and Hayabusa.
Yeah.
And like, that was it. Mm. You know, that was the only, well, Sasuke, let's say Sasuke too.
Yeah, okay.
But Sasuke was only making his way up at this point. So like Liger was already firmly established. That was the shit. Mm. God damn it. I love Jushin Thunder Liger. I was so amped when we pulled this one. I was just like, it is fucking time. Let's go.
Let's go. We need to get some like Hayabusa matches onto the wheel as well.
Hell yeah.
I haven't really watched
Hayabusa versus much. Onita on there.
Nah, I don't know. I will add it again. It'll just rig it to our favor. So I don't think there's any Hayabusa on here.
Hayabusa versus Onita exploding cage match.
Busa versus Onita exploding cage. All right. Add it.
MW, let's go.
It's on the wheel.
Yeah. So this one fucking did it for me. It was like this one or their Monday Nitro. Like the first Monday Nitro had Pillman versus Liger on it. And that was, I believe that was the match that was interrupted by Lex Luger showing up for no reason.
Oh, at the Mall of America.
Yeah.
He interrupted the fucking lightweight guys.
Yeah. Like, well, he doesn't interrupt. He just walks out, stands around in a poofy pirate shirt and then just fucking leaves.
And everybody's like, why was he there? Like,
who gives a shit? Look what's going on. Look what you're fucking missing, you know?
Yeah.
But I think this one was more respectful. It's so fun. If you, this time when I watched it, the one thing I tried to pay attention to was the crowd. Uh-huh. And it's funny because we watched it on Daily Motion, which is just straight up VHS rips.
Uh-huh.
It's not the weirdo versions that they put on the WWE Network.
Yeah.
Where they like change the music and things like that. And they'll go through and like edit the crowds and stuff like that. So mm-hmm. we got to actually hear like a good crowd and what they were doing to really buy into this fucking match, dude. Like they start out very quiet. It's almost like a Japanese crowd at first. Cause there's a little bit of clapping and stuff like that. And then once they ramp up, once this match hits that next gear, crowd goes fucking crazy. They've never seen shit like this before in their lives. They're chanting for Brian Pillman. They're still cheering for Liger at the same time. You know, Liger starts kind of eating it up. He starts playing into the bad guy a little bit. Like everybody wants to see him come off the top rope. Everybody wants to see him, you know, do fucking crazy high dives off the top rope and shit. Mm-hmm. And he really win them in, to really show them who he is? Fucking figure four. Fuck you.
I liked it.
I love that.
See, my first exposure to Brian Pillman is fucking like, what's Loose Cannon, Brian Pillman in WWF, right? So he's got great a fucking stuff. Knee brace on, he's talking shit, he's got a gun and Stone Cold's going to his house, all these things. I was not exposed to Flying Brian, the like light heavyweight ace, right? And I was looking at the history of the WCW light heavyweight champion. There was only ever five champions. He was the inaugural champion on October 27th, 1991, Halloween Havoc. He defeated Richard Morton at the finals of a tournament to become the first champion. So they were obviously thinking, and you can see why when you watch this, like the body on him and like his moveset and all that, like this is a fucking future ace. That's what they're thinking. Then Jushin Thunder Liger beats him for it at a house show in Atlanta, Georgia, which must be the one that you referenced. And then Pillman wins it back from him February 92 at Super Brawl 2. Yep. And then he holds it for like 112 days. And Scotty Flamingo, whoever that is, wins
it. You don't know who Scotty Flamingo is?
Nah. He wins it at Beach Blast.
Would you like to know who Scotty Flamingo is?
Yeah. Who?
Raven.
Oh, really? Is that who he was before he was Raven?
Yeah.
Before he becomes like fucking gothic and depressed and shit.
Yeah.
That's funny. Scotty Flamingo then. So Scotty Flamingo wins it in June 20th, 92. He loses it to Brad Armstrong on a house show in July 5th, 92. But then he gets injured in September 92. And so it doesn't get defended at Clash of Champions. They announce that there's going to be a tournament, but that never happens. And the title's deactivated. Curtis is showing me a picture of Raven as Scotty Flamingo. That is ridiculous. That's great. It's almost impossible to believe that's the same guy.
Yeah. So the WCW light heavyweight, was that part of the J Crown? That might have become part of the J Crown. Let me double check on that.
I don't know. It says
WCW.
Yeah. It just
light heavyweight championship. Let's check the Wikipedia page.
I mean, it might have been while like I held it. It just says the championship was vacated due to Brad Armstrong's injury. A tournament to crown a new champion was announced but never held.
Hmm. Well then, that sucks. Yeah, deactivated. I would have hoped that it became. No, it was the WWF light heavyweight title. That was what was part of the J-Crown.
Sorry
about that, guys.
But then I guess like in WCW, they end up having the Cruiserweight Championship, right? So I guess they deactivated this and then they decide to rebrand it as Cruiserweights rather than light heavyweights. And that and then that begins that whole dynasty there.
So here's the belts that were in the J Crown. It was the British Commonwealth Junior Heavyweight Championship, the IWGP Junior Heavyweight Championship, the NWA World Junior Heavyweight Championship, the NWA World Welterweight Championship, UWA World Junior Light Heavyweight, the WAR International Junior, WWA World Junior Light Heavyweight Championship, and the WWF Light Heavyweight Championship.
Wow.
So that's who, yeah, everybody put their belts in the middle of the ring and went at it, which was fucking cool.
That is cool. Have you ever watched that match?
The finals for it? Yeah, definitely.
So is it like a big multi-man or they all put their belts in the middle of the ring and then there's a tournament and then whoever wins
all of those. There was a tournament.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, there was a tournament because it was like Liger, Sasuke, Negro Casas, Shinjiro Tani, Ultimo Dragon, El Samurai. Like it was all of them. Had
who was
big...
the? Was it Taka? Like was he the WWF light heavyweight champion at the time?
No, it was El Samurai.
Oh, El Samurai was in WWE or WWF at the time. Oh, fuck. Well, there you go. Should watch that tournament.
Yeah, there was no Michinoku Pro Belt in the J Crown.
Yeah, yeah.
But you know the pictures you see of like Ultimo Dragon holding like 10 belts.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, or like coming to the ring with like women carrying them for them and shit because they've got so many belts.
Yeah, yeah. That's the J Crown. That is all of those belts. Whoever held that was the best junior heavyweight.
And who was the first? Was it Liger or was it Ultimo?
It was Ultimo.
Ultimo was first. But Liger Liger did hold it.
Yes, Liger beat Ultimo Dragon for it. Yeah.
Yeah. All righty.
But it was great. It wasn't even Liger got beaten the first round by Ultimo Dragon.
Mm.
Sasuke. Sasuke won. It was Ultimo Dragon versus Sasuke was the final match.
Uh-huh.
Liger and Ultimo Dragon was in the first round.
Right. Okay then. Yeah, sure. I guess it's worth talking about Brian Pillman a little bit more in that, like, I guess what could have been, because it is still, when he wins this, it's still a few years off from his car accident, right? So he's, like, doing the light heavyweight stuff that, I mean, Jesus, he wins this in February 92, but by September 92, the belt doesn't exist anymore. So
yeah.
So is this before Hollywood Blondes? Like,
yeah, I think Hollywood Blondes was like 94.
Yeah, okay. So after this leads him into I guess they don't really do much in lightweight kind
Amp
of stuff.
Amp him up to heavyweight.
Like, yeah.
Let him get in on the tag team scene.
Absolutely. Put him with Steve Austin. They do the Hollywood Blondes thing. Then he is in his car accident, destroys his ankle. Because he's still with WCW when he has that accident, right?
So...
Because I remember he essentially worked WCW to get out of the contract. Like, he didn't want to be there anymore and he started pretending like he'd fucking lost his mind and shit. Oh, actually, maybe he was in WWF when he got injured. Because they probably wouldn't have signed him. I think it happened just after he went to WWF. Because that's how come he's in a fucking brace and shit.
Yeah, I think you're right. Because that was when he was laid up at home when they did the Austin 316 break in with the gun.
Exactly. And Pillman, they wrote him off with the Pillmanator, right? They had Austin do it like put the chair on his ankle and fucking like that's how he broke his ankle in kayfabe.
Yeah. So that was what happened with that. And then like, yeah, he was never the same after that. Cause he was barely, he was not able to wrestle. They had him on commentary a bit, but they were paying him quite a bit.
Yeah.
When they stole him from WCW, they gave him a really good contract. So when he gets in his car accident, he fucks himself up and they're trying to find anything for him to do.
Absolutely.
Just to get him on TV because like they spent a lot of money invested in
absolutely.
This guy.
Plus, I mean, he's a great talker and stuff, so you can definitely use him, you know, like.
Yeah, definitely. And then unfortunately, that's shortly after that's when he passed away.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Which is a shame.
It's a damn shame. I mean, like when you look at, I mean, it seems like two different guys, this clean cut, you know, Flying Brian and the loose cannon, they really do seem like very different wrestlers, but they were both so great. I mean, one dude was too wild for the Four Horsemen. That's got to say something, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like when he was in the Four Horsemen and he was coming out and he was just like ripping off cuss words and stuff like that, trying to get thrown off TV and stuff like that was, oh man, that was really like one of the things that really kickstarted the Attitude Era.
Sure.
You know, that late 90s wrestling boom. Like he was on the cusp of some really wild shit back then.
I mean, the Pillman has a gun thing is a crazy angle. Like fucking, then like Austin's got like a fucking gun in the rig and it had the flag out of it and stuff like that. Austin's going to his house and fucking fighting all those dudes on the front lawn and shit. All of that stuff was crucial in making what would become like the biggest star in wrestling. Like without Brian Pillman's injury, like Stone Cold would hit different because they did all that shit to be creative and to use Pillman.
At Kroger Pharmacy, Care is making it easy to get vaccinated. Care is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. Care is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
Moreno is a MAGA mistake for black families. If Moreno is elected senator, he'll push to eliminate diversity, equality, and inclusion programs as part of the racist MAGA Republican Project 2025. We've come too far to let extremists like Bernie Moreno take us back. MAGA Moreno is a mega mistake for Ohio. Register to vote by October 7th at OhioVoterGuide.org and re-elect Senator Sherrod Brown. Paid for by Win Senate, which is responsible for the content of this ad. WinSenate.org, not authorized by any candidate or candidates committee.
You know, and to get their money's worth, but it kind of worked out way better than if Pillman was active and they could have just had a normal wrestling feud, you know?
It really did. I mean, them spending all that money on Brian Pillman, it seems like maybe it was, I don't want to say wasted, but like they definitely had to get real creative to figure out ways to use this guy that they were paying a lot of good money to. So, I mean, like happy accidents, right?
Yeah. And I mean, I don't know if happy is the word with anything to do with Brian Pillman, but yes. And also like putting him with the Hart Foundation and shit, he's always side of rig or always doing commentary and or fucking hopping around on crutches and shit like that. Like he was really trying. And I feel like I know myself, I fucking really enjoyed the Hart Foundation. And I was like, I can't wait till Brian Pillman can wrestle again, was like the vibe that I had. And then obviously the kind of never really comes to pass, I guess. If it does, I don't really remember any matches after that where he was wrestling again and it imprinted on me in any way. But yeah, I remember being sort of really excited about him.
Yeah, he was so much fun. Like he was one of those characters that really didn't need to wrestle, you know, like he was just so crazy when he was out there. Like he's not even Canadian. What's he doing in the Hart Foundation? Who gives a shit?
Yeah, yeah.
It's awesome.
Exactly.
You know, so like,
who gives a shit? Yeah. Exactly. And he fit with them. It just all worked. And I was left being like, he's the fucking coolest member of this stable, you know? And I don't think, now I think about it, until I watch this match today, like I've seen little bits and pieces, but I think it's probably like the first full Brian Pillman match I've really sat down and taken note of. and it was in his prime and he's doing all this fucking, you know, cruiserweight shit and stuff like that. And I'm like, the dude was crazy.
Yeah, he was fucking wild for 1992. Like, you know, them doing like baseball slides through the ropes and stuff like that.
Suplex to the outside and shit. Like, fucking, yeah, exactly.
It was some wild fucking shit, off the wall shit that people still, you know, today is like considered to like super high risk. Like, you know, big ass moonsault off the top rope to the outside and shit. Man, it's fucking wild. They were going nuts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, and you can see why he was put in that position as well. Like, his look and fucking, yeah, his moveset, all those things. He would have been everything a promoter was looking for, Brian Pillman.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, if he'd been able to really let loose and be a talker back then, because back then they were, you know, he had a really raspy voice because he was, he had a lot of throat surgeries as a kid.
Yeah, sure.
Mm-hmm. So they were kind of, he was talking like this, you know, but like, if he'd been able to really cut loose and be comfortable talking at that point in his career, who knows what could have happened for him? They could have shot his ass to the fucking moon.
Yeah, yeah, so. Exactly. He would go on to become what I would consider a great talker, but I'm sure at the time, like, he was maybe self-conscious about it, like, before.
Yeah, and, like, they probably didn't want him to go wild and be, you know, a loose cannon, and they probably actually wanted him to just kind of be a handsome gentleman, go out there and do cool stuff, and that's all they
need. We don't need to hear his voice. People don't want to hear that voice. They just want to see him and fucking all that stuff. But, yeah, and then that, I mean, that in itself lent itself to him starting to do wild shit at WCW. And like I said earlier, he essentially, like, you can watch the Dark Side of the Ring and different things about him, but he essentially convinced the WCW, like, management and shit, that he was fucking crazy. Like, shoot thought he was crazy and they fucking dropped him so he could go to WWE. You know what I mean? And he played WWE as well to get the best possible deal, but essentially just like fucking got himself out through acting, you know?
he told Eric Bischoff that the best way to write him off TV for kayfabe was to give him an actual letter of termination from WCW.
That's what it was. He's like, that'll be real and I can take photos of it and fucking have it on the thing or whatever and stuff. But he was like, I fucking worked him. And then he was like, oh, I'm not coming back though. How fucking crazy is that? What was Bischoff thinking? Why would he really do it? Just give him a prop one.
I wonder if maybe Bischoff like didn't give a shit. Like maybe Bischoff was like, ah, fuck him, whatever. You know, we're the biggest company. He can fuck off. Who gives a shit?
Well, I mean, he was probably like, fucking, it's fine. Like, we'll just suck it. Yeah, I don't know. It seems like more work than just like having a fake piece. I don't know. But either way, he fucking did it. Like, and then he fucking walked out of the company and walked straight into a big contract at WWF. It's just crazy to think of, had he not had that injury, what he would have been, you know? Like,
oh, yeah. Yeah. He might have been Stone Cold Steve Austin.
Yeah, exactly.
Because he was the crazy one. He was the badass. He like they could have taken all that that Austin stuff and given it to Brian Pillman,
and they probably fucking would have. To be fair, they probably would have
him a lot more than they were Austin. Yeah,
yeah. And I mean, and body wise and all those things, you know, he's more what they'd want to see. You know, he's a handsome dude and things like that. So there's every chance. But yeah. Happy, like you said, happy accidents or serendipity or fate or whatever it is, it worked out that fucking his injury and stuff ended up helping Steve and really played that linchpin, one of those linchpin roles between the Bret Hart rivalry and then Brian Pillman and then Vince McMahon, like these huge rivalries that, oh, and then obviously Shawn as well, these and The Rock, but they're just these linchpin things that just every single rivalry just sent him higher. You know, with every interaction, but yeah, it's wild. But yeah, this was great. This is our first kind of like New Japan-y vibed out Wheel of Wrestling, and I'm glad we got to see it.
Well, during the Viagra on a Pole match, they did mention Inoki and Riki Choshu and things like that.
So the other great fucking thing. I did enjoy Jesse the Body Ventura on commentary and Jim Ross on commentary for this match. At one point, Jesse Shoot fucking says, he's like, you know, the mask on Justin Thunder Liger reminds me of the Predator. just like the time I fucking beat his ass in 97, in fucking whatever, in 87 or whatever, like talking about beating up the Predator in the film.
Dude, like, it's so funny because you see that, like, Pillman's so much bigger than Liger.
Yeah.
And like, he's got like a great body on him and stuff like that. And then like Liger's just like, you know what? Fuck you, power bomb.
And oh, like, yeah. Yeah. I know that power bomb was huge as well.
That's the coolest part of Liger is that like, yeah, he's a fucking light heavyweight and stuff like that. But he's also like fucking wide as a house and he will fuck you up.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Like, I love Liger so much. God, I love that dude.
It's so good. I don't remember what I saw.
What's he doing? Bring him back. Let's let him save New Japan.
Yeah, fuck. How crazy was it? I don't know why I saw it the other day or whatever, but that angle they did when Liger was kind of doing his, I guess, last run, when he just did the Keishin Liger thing with Suzuki and he fucking tears off all his shit and he puts that spike through the table and stuff. You're like, this guy was so fucking good, dude. Like,
dude, yeah. Oh, that wasn't the only time that spike came out for Keishin Liger. Mm-hmm. Keishin, he brought it out against, Keishin Liger was out against Taichi.
Oh, really? Yeah. Way back in the day?
Yeah, way back in the day. Tried to end him with a railroad spike as well. Tried to choke out Great Muta with a railroad spike. Uh-huh. I've always wanted, there's a very famous picture I'll send to you of Keishin Liger, and he's like, he's got the railroad spike in Great Muta's mouth, and he's just like fucking choking with it. And like, there's like Tiger Hattori's like right there, like, oh, and I've always wanted that like on a t-shirt. I just think it's the coolest wrestling picture ever.
Was Keishin Liger like Jushin Thunder Liger's answer to the Great Muta sort of thing? Was that the story
that
happened?
The first time he ever came out was against the Great Muta. We can put that on the wheel. Let's put that on the wheel.
Okay. Muta versus
Jushin Liger versus Muta. Keishin Liger first appearance.
Yeah. Okay. I'm adding it in.
Keishin Liger only came out four times, but each time he did, it was a lot of fun.
I think the coolest part about the Suzuki thing is it came out of nowhere, right? Like he just fucking tears off his shit and he's like just half painted and fucking going wild. Like it like happened spare of the moment. And that was a fucking great reveal. It wasn't like this big build or whatever. Just they're in this fucking bloody fight. And he just gets pushed too far, and then he fucking goes him. Yeah,
that's what Keishin Liger means. Keishin Liger is it means Beast King Liger.
Oh, really?
And so yeah, like that's the answer to Jushin Liger's. When Keiji Muto gets pushed too far, he becomes the Great Muta. Same exact thing. Uh-huh. So good times. Let's see here. I mean, Keishin Liger only came out four times, but let's go ahead and see how many times or where he came out. Because I know the first time was against Muta. The second time, I don't remember. The third time was against Taichi, and the fourth time was against Suzuki. Let's see if I can find it. It doesn't matter. Yeah. We'll look it up. I'll look it up when I'll write a whole essay about Keishin Liger if we ever get that on the wheel of spins.
Silence. Bring back my wheel. Bring it back. Where it at? Here it goes. Here goes the wheel. Spin, 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 spin. Give me something.
Was that Speed Racer?
Good. Oh, yeah, it was. This was a suggestion by a listener at The Kitten's Paw. Has suggested Shibata versus Ishii G1 2023. I believe that was the 8th of April 2013.
2013. Did you put 2023? Huh? Did you type in 2023 because it was 2013?
No, fingered it. I said 20. No, it was G1 23. It was year 2013. Motherfucker.
Yes.
I know how to type. Shit. That is going to be great. I'm very excited about that. That's an absolute classic.
What up, Ashley? The Kitten's Paw. Fucking let's watch Shibata and fucking Ishii go to town.
Absolutely murder each other. That's going to be dope.
Oh, I love it.
I'm pumped. Finally, a New Japan match on one of these things.
Yeah. on this Ichiban Sweetcast.
Yeah, exactly. We don't fucking often get to talk New Japan fucking matches on the wheel. So here we go. Awesome. All right.
I'm in. What we should do is maybe go ahead and wrap this up, and you should tell everybody who we are.
Absolutely.
And what we do.
I normally get you to do that because I don't know all the things, but we have been the Ichiban Sweetcast. If you want to follow us online, Curtis will tell you where to follow us.
You motherfucker.
You're so good at it.
You can find us on Twitter and Instagram at Ichiban Sweet.
I do the sign off. That's all I do. And I don't even remember that every time.
I'm busy looking at Kishin Liger stats.
Yeah. At Ichiban Sweet. I know that. At Faces Feels Cast. At El Destructo 83. Those are the places you find us. Check out at Count Out Pod, is it? Countout Network.
Patreon.com/countoutpod.
Yeah, there you go. You can support everybody on the Countout Network and get our extra show, The Sweet Spot, where Curtis and I talk about whatever is going on in life. Recently, we did what was sort of like a book club, wasn't it, Curtis? We were talking about Grady Hendrix's Final Girls Club. Final Girls Support Group, which was a horror movie, a horror movie themed book. It's about various final girls, like analogies for, like, you know, Nancy and the last girls from Scream and stuff who have grown up and now regularly go to a support group where they, like, help each other out, but then somebody starts to kill them off one by one. We had both read that and really enjoyed it. So, and now we're into other Grady Hendrix stuff. I have just finished How to Sell a Haunted House, which I really liked, and now I'm reading My Best Friend's Exorcism, which Curtis has just finished. And both of these, I would say, have been better than Final Girl Support Group. So
I really love Best Friend's Exorcism. We should talk about that sometime soon.
Well, I'll be through it, so you need to watch the other one. Because I'm not all the way through this one, but so far I'm still thinking How to Sell a Haunted House is my favorite.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So you got to get at it. But you read them in paper. I read them in audiobook. So that's the difference. You've actually got to order them in, where I just fucking get about them.
That's okay. I read pretty fast.
Yeah. You do. Yeah. I turn around and you're like, oh, fuck, you've already finished it. But you have a lot of bus trips and stuff, right?
Yep.
Anyway, rate, subscribe, listen or die, Spirit of Fight, Style of Strong, Sweetcast, Ichiban.
Ichiban. Jushin Thunder Liger.
This has been a Count Out Podcast. Count Out provides a wide variety of bonus content that is right at your fingertips. On the Count Out Patreon, our podcasts are creating bonus content exclusively for you, their listener. For only $5 a month, you can watch instant reactions to major shows, watch-alongs, early access to main feed podcasts, some fun goof and gag audio, plus shows from some of the podcasters' outside interests. It's the best way to experience all that the Countout Network has to offer. So head on down to patreon.com/countout to take part in some of the best and most fun content wrestling has to offer. Again, that is patreon.com/countout.
At Kroger Pharmacy, care is making it easy to get vaccinated. Care is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. Care is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store.
Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
Make no mistake, Trump-backed Bernie Moreno is a MAGA mistake for black families in Ohio.
We're not going to replace racism in this country from decades ago with a new form of racism, which is what DEI is.
If Bernie Moreno is elected senator, he will support the MAGA playbook and implement the thinly disguised Racist Project 2025 agenda. That means ending diversity, equity, and inclusion programs that exist to correct the impacts of racism. MAGA extremists like Moreno believe programs that have helped our families are entitlement programs, but they have no problem giving their buddies a boost by passing more tax giveaways for rich folks like themselves. Black Americans like me have worked hard and persevered in fighting for a fair shot. We've come too far to let self-serving extremists like Bernie Moreno take us back. That's why we must re-elect Senator Sherrod Brown. He has fought for equal opportunity for black families and will continue to do so. Go to OhioVoterGuide.org and register by October 7th. Paid for by WinSenate, which is responsible for the content of this ad. WinSenate.org, not authorized by any candidate or candidates committee.